Hi, I'm Tim Marshall. Welcome to R&B Showcase. We have some special guests in the studio. First, I want to welcome my co-host. Welcome them back to the R&B Showcase, Jammin' Jeff Wyman. How you doing, Jeff?
It's an absolute pleasure and an honor to be here. Thank you for having me here today.
Well, I appreciate you being here. I'm really excited about today's show because in the building, we have a legendary radio personality. Some of you remember from WOGL. Some may even go back to WPGR. He also danced on American Bandstand, and he's got a story to tell about Philadelphia radio. He is a legend. We're going to welcome him to the show. Tommy McCarthy is our special guest.
Tim, thank you, my man. Great to be here, my friend. And Jammin' Jeff, good to see you, too. Hey, it's going to be. I'm really glad you gave me a call about coming in to do this because, you know, so many things over the years have like slipped away where people forgot about the great history of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. This is where it all began. Mm-hmm. You know, it really did. It began even before Dick Clark here mm-hmm. in Philadelphia. Okay. So there's a lot of history to talk about. And Philadelphia, what a great place where so many people were discovered. Radio disc jockeys, singing artists, just so many things. And I'm real glad to be here, buddy. You're a good man.
Thank you so much, man. There's so much history to share about Philadelphia. Before we do that, Tommy, I want to go back to where we first actually met. And a friend was telling me where he was a singer by the name of Eddie Adams Jr. He was telling me about, I know Tommy McCarthy. I've been in touch with Tommy McCarthy. He's coming out to the benefit that we're having for cystic fibrosis. I said, Tommy McCarthy's coming to the benefit?
Right.
He said, yes, he is. And lo and behold, here you come walking through the door, Tommy, and I want to thank you for that. That was something we did back, I think it was early 2000s, Jeff, for the Intruders. We had the Intruders, and we had
right.
That was a great event
from yeah. Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
Yeah, it was.
And it was a benefit for cystic fibrosis. And Tommy right. McCarthy, you were part of that coming down to help us raise funds for this great foundation. So we appreciate you, man. Well,
my pleasure. I remember that because that actually popped up as a memory in my Facebook not too long ago.
Okay.
And I think I put the picture up of you and I standing up yes. there on the stage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a great night.
That was. It was a lot of fun, man. I really appreciate
that. Thank you.
So, and then we've been in touch over the years. I think I saw you some of the Walk of Fame events.
All right.
In
yes,
Philadelphia
definitely. Yeah.
For the Philadelphia. But I want to take us back a little bit. We're talking about some of that history of Philadelphia and Philadelphia radio. Really, Philadelphia is a really unique town.
Oh,
talking
yeah.
about radio. Nobody, I mean, from the music they're playing, the beat size, the album tracks,
right.
and the great personalities of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Why don't you take us back a little bit and give us some history about how you got started with Philadelphia radio.
Okay, well, how it started for me was, you know, as a kid, I was always attracted, like I like sports, like all of my friends like sports, baseball, basketball, all of that. Basketball was always my favorite, okay. but music was like, to me, was like my drug. When I would put music on in my bedroom and I would play those records that I started buying records at 9 years old. I started buying records at 9 years old, and I would go in my bedroom, and no matter what was going on in my life, when I would start playing those songs, I was just lost. I was transfixed with the music, and never thinking that I would someday get on the radio and play this stuff. I just knew that I loved it more than playing baseball. Let's put it that way. So, on my 14th, we lived down in Cape May, New Jersey at that time. And Sally Starr, if you remember Sally mm-hmm. Starr, she had a local TV show on Channel 6, which mm-hmm. was the same channel that carried Bandstand, even okay. before it was American Bandstand. So she would come to Cape May. She had a boat she kept at a marina in Cape May. And my father happened to be the general manager of that boat marina. Mm-hmm. So that's how I met Sally Starr. And she became friendly with my parents and me. So to make a long story short, so my 14th birthday was coming up. And you know, in those days, in order to get into Bandstand, if you were one of the quote unquote regulars who were the faces that you knew and saw every day on Bandstand, you just had to get in the line outside the door and hope that you would get in before the cutoff point of, say, 150 people. Then they would cut it off. And if you didn't get in that day, you'd have to try another day.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than ever to take a chance to drive up from Cape May, New Jersey to go to Philadelphia and possibly get in. So long story short, my 14th birthday was coming up and my parents said to Sally, said, Sally, you know, Tommy would really love to meet Dick Clark and go on Bandstand. Do you think there's anything you could do for him? And she said, oh, sure, without a doubt. She said, when's he coming up? And they said, well, my birthday was November the 2nd. So she said, fine, I'll get passes for him to come in. Would he like to bring some friends with him? So I asked a couple of my classmates in school, and six of us came up, and she gave us passes. We walked right in and got to go on Bandstand. So that to me was like, wow, it's like the atomic bomb went off in my life. You know, I'm on Bandstand, dancing on Bandstand. So after the show, because Sally's show, Popeye Theater, followed Bandstand. First, there was the Mickey Mouse Club. Mm-hmm. Then they had 15 minutes of news in those days. And then her show came on at 6 o'clock. So she said, after the show, you guys, you know, your family, wait for us. And you can watch me film Popeye Theater.
Oh, wow.
So we did all that. I got to meet Dick Clark. After the show, Dick Clark came out and he autographed a picture to me at that time. Mm-hmm. So years go by, you know, I go into school and I go to through high school, and I didn't go to college, but I went in the Air Force. I was in the Air Force for 4 years. So when I got out of the Air Force, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I know I always was attracted to radio. So one day I just started knocking on doors of all these small radio stations, and eventually I got a job down in Millville, New Jersey on WMVB doing weekends. So it started there, and then I had a job at WMID in Atlantic City. So I was taking stepping stones up to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So eventually I worked at New Jersey 101.5, but then eventually I got into Philadelphia. And in 1982, I started working with High Lit on what then was still called WRCP radio. It was a country station that flipped to oldies because they were hiring High Lit. And they based on his success at knowing who he was, they flipped the entire format from country to rock and roll oldies because Heisky was going to be the crown jewel of this radio station. Mm-hmm. And they needed people who knew the music and could compliment High on the radio. And luckily, I got hired to work with Heisky there. And then a year later, they changed the call letters to WPGR for Philly Gold Radio. So we worked together there, and we did that for 8 or 9 years. Wow. And then eventually FM wasn't playing oldies yet. Mm-hmm. FM stations shied away from it. And then eventually 98.1, which is WCAU, which was a hot hits format, they decided to drop that format and go oldies because of the success of our sister station, WCBS FM in New York. Okay. They had been oldies since the 70s, and they were number one in the market. So the CBS Radio Corporation thought, let's start flipping some of our stations to oldies for ratings, because the demo was there. The 25 to 54-year-old, the money demo, they call it, 25 to 54-year-olds are attracted to that 50s and 60s format. So one by one, Don Cannon was hired to do the morning show. Wow. They brought in High Lit. Mm-hmm. They brought in myself. They brought in Harvey Holiday and Bob Pantano. Wow. So the station, we all of us who came in brought in like our own audiences as our careers through the years were growing. We all had our own quote unquote followings of doing nightclubs. We all did nightclub work. I did weddings, class reunions, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, anything I could do to make a dollar. You know, I was out there doing gigs all the time, aside from doing the radio stations, because the small stations didn't pay that much money. So to make a living, you had to do something else. And so I decided to do nightclub work and weddings and all that kind of thing. So then, so we got there, and by 1990-92, the station was the number one station in Philadelphia, playing the greatest hits of the 50s and 60s. And I was made the music director of the radio station, which meant I got to not so much pick the music, because we had we would have studies with focus groups who would come in, and we would play snippets of songs. I don't know if you heard this, or if this is too much inside baseball, but
no, we would play
snippets of songs like Sugar Pie Honey Bunch, and then you go on to the next track, like My Girl, My Girl, something like that. And the people would vote on whether or not they liked that record. There was a dial, a dial, sitting on a desk that they would sit at, and we would bring in like 150 people in that demo, the 25 to 54-year-olds, and we would play the snippets of these songs, and the test would run about 2 hours long with all these snippets. We did like 500 songs.
Okay.
We would test like 500 songs at a time, and the people would turn the dial to the right if they liked it. They keep it in the middle. It was like that, like a little bit like it, don't care about it. Or if they didn't like it, they would turn the dial to the left. So that's how they would vote on the songs that we would pick for them to judge. Okay. Once I got that information back, out of that 500 songs, about 250 to 300, I would decide basing on the scores that we would play those for the next 6 months until we had the next music test. Mm-hmm. So that's how all radio stations, successful big radio stations, decide how to go, whether it's WDAS or Power 99. They all did the focus groups to decide what music that the people, their listeners, really wanted to hear on the radio. And then you decided by putting them in categories how often they would play. The highest rated songs were considered powers, mm-hmm. and then you had secondaries, and then you had tertiary records that weren't played as much or maybe played overnight, mm-hmm. things like that. So I programmed all of our top 20 countdowns that Hi-Lit hosted over the years. Our Beatles show on Sunday mornings. Mm. Of course, we did the top nines at nine, mm-hmm. which were various themes. And then we would do our countdowns on the weekend, whether it was the top 500 songs of all time, or if it was specialty songs of any nature. Maybe it was Motown, mm-hmm. for instance, like that, or the British Invasion. Mm-hmm. So we that's how we kept the station alive all those years. And then as the years went on, the station remained successful, but then I had to keep moving the music up to keep the demo down. Okay. Because a lot of people over the years would say to me, well, why don't you still play more 50s music? Mm-hmm. Why are you playing more late 60s, for instance? Or now you're playing some 70s. And it all came to do with you had to keep for the advertiser's sake. Mm-hmm. Let's face it. If you don't have advertisers mm-hmm. spending money, mm-hmm. you're not going to make money. Right. You're not going to be able to pay your talent. You're not going to mm-hmm. be able to pay for your engineering staff or mm-hmm. keep the lights on. Right. You know, so it all had to do with that. So in order to keep the ratings up, I had to keep the demo, the 25 to 54 year olds listening. Mm-hmm. And once that started to drop some, I had to bring it up by dropping off a year, say dropping off 1956, but adding 1972, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. We would drop off a year and mm-hmm. pick up a year to step it up, but do it in a way where it wasn't so drastic, where most of the listeners didn't realize right. that why aren't you playing that much Elvis anymore, mm-hmm. for instance, you're playing more Motown, mm-hmm. because that's the way it's mm-hmm. going. Mm-hmm. And so that was my job for 26 years at 98.1 WOGL FM in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. I always wondered how you would program a classic or in the classic radio show, you know, and did you go by the same way they did on the top 40 shows? It's very interesting history that you shared with us in regards to that.
Right. It depended on what the weekend was going to be or what the mm-hmm. show was going to be. Like if we did a top nine at nine, we would do a thing, say maybe it was about the weather. So it'd be nine songs that had to do with the weather mm-hmm. or something that happened on this date or something like that. The Summer of Love, 1967, you'd do something like that. So it depended on what I was thinking at the time to try to put something together. And then we would do the one of my favorite features to do was with during the basketball season, March Madness, we would do a Motown countdown just like the March Madness. We'd start with the brackets and we would have people call in and vote on their songs and we would knock them down. Mm-hmm. We started on a Friday afternoon and through the weekend, we would do it just like the March Madness in basketball is played. And by Monday, we would have the highest rated song and at 5 o'clock on Monday afternoon. So we would do things like that.
Now, we talked about programming at OGL. Did you also do the doo-wop shows on the weekends?
I did that too. Yeah, okay. I programmed those for Harvey Holiday for 10, 12, 13 years, something like that. In the very beginning, on the specialty shows, we would play vinyl 45 RPM mm-hmm. records. Mm-hmm. But then as a few years went by, the technology changed where they took the turntables out of the studio.
Wow.
And then things went either on CD, okay. and then they eventually went into the computer, just like the laptop you're looking at right mm-hmm. now. So at that time, I would have all the music burned into the computer, just okay. like you'd see DJs playing parties today, or you may mm-hmm. go out and do that. Right. It's all on a computer today. Right. Well, radio stations are that way now. Nobody's playing vinyl on there. So once that happened, it was easier for me to program the station ahead of time. I was always 3 days ahead programming the radio station in case I got sick or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I would program like the Sunday night show, like on a Thursday. and I would put all the music in. Mm-hmm. Harvey would look at it, and if he wanted, got some request, like a text request or email request during the week, he would say, "But put this in for Betty Lou or something like mm-hmm. that." Mm-hmm. And I would change a song or two. but basically, he just followed what I say. Follow the roadmap. That's all okay. you got to do. Same thing with High Lit when I did the top 20 countdowns for Heisky. Mm-hmm. It was, as you say, Heisky, follow the bouncing ball. That's all you got to do, you mm-hmm. know. And he just put in his information in between.
Was there any, did you get any resistance with having the program, like, you know, the shows like that?
No, not really. It was an adjustment mm-hmm. of somebody letting go of the reins, for instance, like mm-hmm. somebody like High or Harvey, who always had control all those years. Mm-hmm. And of course, I was the younger kid coming up, and here I'm like telling them what to do, right, kind of
right,
a thing.
Right.
But they trusted my expertise mm-hmm. because that's why I had the job, because
right.
I had the knowledge, just not the experience mm-hmm. in years mm-hmm. that they had, of course, because when I was a teenager, I listened to High Lit on the radio. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to, I listened to him from 62. Okay, so I listened to High Lit for 20 years before I got to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I picked it, everything he said, I mm-hmm. remembered. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so I had that knowledge. So mm-hmm. everybody, that's how I got the job, was because I had the knowledge mm-hmm. of the music. They didn't just say, "Hey, let's throw Tommy McCarthy in mm-hmm. there just because we need a body in there to do the job."
Right.
You had to have the knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I had to know the flow to get the mix. So they were totally confident with them. Mm-hmm. And plus, I had worked with them earlier, either doing some nightclub work mm-hmm. or even on other stations like PGR before we got to OGL, right? So and 102 IOQ, Harvey and I worked there together as well.
Okay.
So we had worked together in different capacities before I became their music director, let's put it that way.
Let's talk about WPGR. That is a very classic and historic radio station lineup
right.
of personalities. I mean, I was looking at one of the pictures that was on your website there, and I'm like, you guys all worked at that station
yeah.
at the same time?
It was good. Yeah, it was good.
Let's talk about the people you worked with at that station.
Okay, well, some of the people that worked with, first of all, as I mentioned earlier, High Lit was the cornerstone of that radio station. Okay. When they hired him, like I said, prior to that, that radio station was a country station. They hired High Lit and they said, "Well, we're not going to play country with High Lit. So we're going to flip it to oldies, because that's from the Wibbage era. We want to play music at the beginning in 82. We wanted to play music from the Wibbage era, the era that people remember High Lit from, the music he played when it was new music."
Mm-hmm.
So we were playing all that. We were playing Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Buddy Holly and all the big artists of the 50s and early 60s, and Motown as well,
okay.
playing the Temptations, the Four Tops, the Supremes, all of those groups. So those days, so that's how the station was built. So they hired High Lit, then I was hired. A little bit later, they hired Harvey Holiday,
okay.
and then even a little bit later, Jerry Blavitt was hired towards the end.
Okay.
So we were all there. A fellow by the name of Armand in the Morning was there for a while. He was a great guy. God bless his soul. He was there for a while. And Georgie Woods, the guy with the goods.
Wow.
We had Georgie Woods working there. Huh. So it was, yeah. Mm-hmm. Talk about a guy who, when I was a little kid listening to the radio,
yes.
between Georgie Woods and Jocko, mm-hmm. those guys were the guys. And Butterball, mm-hmm. too. But prior to even Butterball, it was Georgie Woods and Jocko, the ace from mm-hmm. outer space. And Jocko, for a short time, did a Sunday night show prior to Harvey Holiday's doo-wop show on Sunday night on OGL.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
That's right, sure did.
It was just for mm-hmm. just about a year.
A short time.
He was getting a little older, so mm-hmm. It was like the last radio station. Mm-hmm.
Were they competing at the same time? Or?
No. Harvey was on WDAS at the
right.
time.
7 to midnight, right?
Yeah, you're right. He was 7 to midnight on mm-hmm. DAS. Well, he left DAS when he came to PGR.
Okay.
So he was off there. Now, they hired Harvey and me and High. We were all working day earlier shifts. On the weekend, Jocko was hired to do the original. It was a soul oldie show. It wasn't a doo-wop show. It was, but he was playing a lot of the dubs and the harp tones and all the doo-wop groups as well. But it was considered more a soul show mm-hmm. as opposed to a doo-wop show, because it wasn't just vocal group harmony. He was playing James Brown and Solomon Burke and mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So So Jocko came on for just about 1 year. But like I said, he was aging at the time. And so and the ratings weren't where we really had hoped at the time. So Harvey went to a management and said, listen, I was on WDAS-FM for years with my Sunday night show from 7 to midnight. And he brought in his rating book, so how good his ratings were. He said, why don't you give me a shot at it? So we did. So when Jocko left, Harvey got that shift.
Okay.
And it became a doo-wop show at that point. And he did it for like 20-some years, 29 years, I think.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. It was some great history
long
there.
A long time.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So I remember, you remember that station, right, Jeff?
I sure do. I practically had that on my save dial all the time listening to it. I couldn't stop because they had the best oldies, the best oldies out of any other radio station in the world. The area, and I thought they just, you know, what can you say?
Well, we all brought our own taste into it. See, that was the beauty of that. Mm-hmm. We didn't really have an official program director.
Okay.
We did not have a music director. Mm-hmm. It was basically high lit on the radio. Mm-hmm. Tommy McCarthy, you're not as well known yet, but Heisky's, you're going to follow high every day. And believe me, you'll be cool following high lit every day. Mm-hmm. So then it was me. And then following me was Jerry Blavin later on.
What was that like?
Yeah. Well, I was like keeping those two at arm's length the beginning.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, to be follow. Yeah, Harvey Holiday did mornings, then high lit, then me, then Jerry Blavin. That was the four powerhouse, four heavy hitters, I guess you'd call on that radio station at the height of it. Okay. Now that had changed through the years because Harvey had left. Mm-hmm. He went to Solid Gold 102 before me. That's when they brought in Armand in the morning. Mm-hmm. He did mornings for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I had left, but then I had came back. So some other guys had changed in and out. But that was
Jason the Music Mason. Was he there?
He was there after I left. Jason, he's a great guy. Yeah. I'm good friends with Jason.
Jason Lee, I think.
Jason Lee. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's still around. He's doing sports now on a Channel 17, I believe. But he was there at one time. There was a number of different people that came and went in the later, it started 82. Mm-hmm. By 90, when we were all at OGL, then it started changing with various players. Mm-hmm. And it started, and then it became Geeter Gold Radio.
Right, I remember
it
that,
really wasn't, they kept the call letters PGR, but they were calling it Geeter Gold Radio. Mm-hmm. They weren't calling it Philly Gold Radio anymore. So that had changed as well, where it was Jerry and then other people playing around, you know, around him.
How about
on the
Georgie
dial.
Woods? Was he part of that?
Yeah, he era? Was during that era. Yeah, just as I was leaving, he was coming in. Georgie Woods. Yeah, I used to love him. I used to eat his potato chips.
No, yeah. Remember the Georgie Woods potato chips? Oh man,
remember his trucks?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
see the Georgie Woods potato chips trucks riding around.
Thanks, that's a great memory.
And he wrote a book. He wrote a great book. He gave me a great autographed copy of his book. Mm-hmm. But Georgie Woods, the guy with the goods. He was he was back, like I said, he and Jocko, when I was in my early teens, listening to them on WHAT and WDAS AM, long before the FM days, these were the AM days of radio, you know, WHAT AM and WDAS AM is the stations they were on in those days with Carl Helm, Butterball started on the AM side, Jimmy Bishop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you name it. Mm-hmm. This town had the greatest air personalities.
Yeah, we did.
And everybody had their own rap, the way they phrased things, the way they introduced records was always different. It was not like you hear today, everybody is, I'm so-and-so, it's 252 and the Beatles are coming up next. Mm-hmm. There's no personality.
No personality.
It's all just a drop-in. It's all just a drop-in. And, it's sad, but I'm just lucky that I grew up at a time, not that I like getting older, but looking back on my career and my life, I'm so glad I grew up at a time when I was drawn. That's what made my career, was listening to these guys on the radio and thinking, wow, because it was called theater of the mind in those days. Mm-hmm. You know that phrase. I'm sure you do, Tim.
Yep.
Theater of the mind is when you're creating something on the radio and people start picturing it, and everybody has maybe a different picture in their mind of what you're creating. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We would talk about going to the drive-ins or going to the record hops during the days, right?
You did a lot of those, didn't you?
Yeah, a lot of that stuff, right.
The record hops.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of record hops.
I know you did.
So, Yeah. You know, so whatever you were talking about, going to the hot shops. Mm-hmm. You remember hot shops?
Mm-hmm. Hot shops.
Yeah. The hot shops. There was a place that, you know, they hung out and you got your soda. You got your root beers and your ice cream sodas and all that stuff. They were called the hot shops. It was a chain of throughout Philadelphia where the kids all, teenagers all congregated. That's where you'd go out there on a Friday and you'd meet your date for a Saturday night, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? It was just a great way to, for teenagers to mingle back in those days, as well as going to the record hops that used to draw 2,000 kids without problems. Mm-hmm. You may have a fight or two, but there was never like a disastrous situation.
Like
yeah, not like today. You know, you would always have, somebody would always be shoving somebody or something like that.
That's just natural,
but it was but that was natural with the teens just blowing off steam. But it was always a fun time, and it just was a great time to grow up and remember. And the lyrics of those songs always related. If you listen to the lyrics, especially of doo-wop music, it always relates to teenage romance, a teenage way of life, the things that are on kids' minds. You know, it just was such great songwriting in those days for teenagers. If you grew up in that era, to love that music, and really even through the Motown years.
I was gonna ask, what are some of your favorite, you know, artists that you like to listen to? You mentioned Motown. Your favorite Motown artist?
I love Smokey Robinson. I'll tell you a story one time, and I wish this was long before the cell phones. I always had a cell phone at that time. So one day, Smokey's appearing at the Man Music Center. And they bring Smokey in for, he was making a round at various stations. He went to WDAS. He went to Power 99.
Okay.
And he came to our station. Our FM station of PGR was WSNI 104.5. Mm-hmm. That was now in those days, you know, that was FM. We're talking the 80s now. So FM is really the big thing. AM radio, forget about it. So they bring Smokey in to do an on air interview with the jock on WSNI.
Okay.
So he's walking down the hallway to get to that studio. Now, to do that, he has to pass my door at PGR. Now, the music's not loud to bleed through in a studio, but you can hear the music slightly because it's soundproof. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you can hear the music slightly. So he's walking down the hall to go to SNI, and he hears, I don't know what the song was at the time, but whatever it was I was playing caught his ear. And he goes to the person taking him down and says, "What's that? What's in there?" And they go, "Oh, that's the AM station. That's our PGR." But, well, what are they playing? What is that song? You know, and so he pushes the door open, and I'm on the air. And I turn around, and I like to fell on my knees. I Smokey Robinson, guy. I didn't even know they were bringing him in for the interview, or I would have brought a camera that day.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't have a, that was my point of my story was I didn't get a picture of this, but I'll tell you the story real quick. So he comes in, and they said, But Smokey, the interview's down the hall. He says, "Well, I'll get down there in a minute. Wait a minute." So he comes in and he says to me, "Man, what are you playing?" He says, "I forget what the song was." He said, "I haven't heard that song and I don't know when." I said, "Oh, Smokey, we play this stuff all the time." He says, "Really, man, this is really hip. What's some of the stuff you play?" So I told him, he's going, "Wow." And I said, "But Smokey, you've made some of the greatest music of all time." He says, "Oh, thank you for saying that." I said, "No, really. Here in Philadelphia, you won't believe this, but your B-sides are bigger than A-sides in other cities." He says, "Oh, come on." I said, "I'm going to tell you the truth. Here's a couple of your," he couldn't remember off the top of my head. I said that we play these songs. "Would I Love You," right?
Beautiful record.
What a record.
Yes.
How about Save Me? Remember Save Me?
Yeah, I do. That's a good
It's a good, good feeling. How about that record?
Love it. Good dance record.
Happy Landing. You know, I've Been Good to You, right?
Yes.
What's So Good About Goodbye? He's like, wow. So he stayed with me the whole time. He never went down to the he never went down for the interview because he missed the whole when he was supposed to be there. He stays there. So he stayed with me, and I'm on the radio on PGR saying, "I got Smokey Robinson. Hey, man." He said, "What do you want to hear?" and all this stuff. So he hung out with me, but I don't have a picture of it or a recording or anything. But that was, to me, was like one of the highlights of my career.
That's a great story,
but so the Motown stuff, of course, the Tempting Temptations, but I'll tell you another story with the Four Tops. I hosted a show at Penn's Landing with Levi and the Four Tops. Now, this is when Levi was starting to be ill. He wasn't really, he was great. He had to sit all the time. He was even in a wheelchair at the time. He was really getting sick. But he was able to stand for the show. He was amazing. People in the audience did not know that he wasn't feeling well. He got out there with Duke and the guys, and he just rocked the house. But so we're backstage at the at Penn's Landing on doing this show. And we had such a great conversation. Same thing with him. Like, Where Do You Go? And some of these songs that weren't big hits in other areas that I told them that we knew and loved here. Love Has Gone. Mm-hmm. How about Love? Oh, man, what a record. Yes. You know, he's like blown away that I not only know this stuff, mm-hmm. but we actually play this on our radio station. So those are some of the great memories with them. And I'll tell you one last one about Temptations. David Ruffin and Eddie Kendricks. Mm-hmm. Now, there was no longer the Temptations. You know, they had split up. They came to the Woodbine Inn in Pennsauken. The last time they ever performed together was at the Woodbine, and I emceed that show.
I was there.
You were there that night?
I was at that show. Okay. Yes, I remember that show. Yes.
Okay, now here's
David, Eddie, and Dennis, I think, was three of them, wasn't it?
Say
Dennis,
that again?
It wasn't David Ruffin, Eddie Kendricks, and Dennis Edwards.
I don't remember Dennis there. Maybe Dennis was at
there.
The time.
Yeah, Woodbine, yeah.
Here's what I remember. Mm-hmm. You're probably right. You're younger than me. Your memory's probably better. But I'll tell you this. We're backstage, and I got back to talk to those two. Mm-hmm. Now, Dennis may have been there. I do not remember, but I'll tell you with David Ruffin and Eddie Kendricks. So we're sitting there at a table, and we're talking about the intros and all that, how I was going to introduce them formally of the Temptations and all this. And so I said to them, I said to David Ruffin, I said, David, I have one request for you of a song. I said, I don't know if you're going to play it, sing it tonight. I said, but here in Philadelphia, this song on my radio station gets more requests than any other Motown song right now. And he said, what is that? And I said, A Statue of a Fool. He liked to say, what? I said, A Statue of a Fool. I said, David, are you going to sing that tonight? And he said, well, I didn't have plans for that. We didn't work out, you know, in rehearsal to do that. He said, let me think about it. So I'm saying, well, I got to tell you here. He says, are you sure? Is that big here? I said, if you sing Statue of a Fool, you won't believe. Now, do you remember him singing that?
Yes, I do.
So I didn't, when I left the room to go out to MC, he did not confirm to me he was going to sing it yet, right? So I didn't know. So I bring him on, blah, blah, blah. I'm down at my table watching it. And so the lights go out, and then the spot comes on him, and he's doing, they can't see me do this, but he's making, you know, the Statue of a Fool. Mm-hmm. He's like this. He's got the silhouette with his hand on his head like this. And I said, oh my God, he's going to sing it. Mm-hmm. And he said, and that place go nuts? Yeah, did that place go crazy?
Yes, it did. Yes.
That place went crazy.
It went crazy. Yeah.
A Statue of a Fool. Still one of the most beautiful songs ever.
Beautiful.
So that was as far as I know, it's the last time professionally he ever sang that, because it wasn't long after that that he died.
Right, I remember, yes.
Yeah, he died here in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great piece of history, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Tommy, I could talk to you for a couple of hours.
Am I talking too much?
You have so much history to share, though. It's wonderful. It's great, man.
Thank you.
Can you, real quick, give a little advice to those trying to get into this industry today?
Okay. Well, it's a little difficult to give advice because things have changed so much. Mm-hmm. Now, I think I mentioned earlier, when I started out, you used to go to these small radio stations who still had live disc jockeys on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, these small radio stations. There was no technology to have it any other way. Mm-hmm. Either that or you signed the station off. It had to be manned by a live person. So in my day, I started knocking on doors. Like I said, I got my first job down in Millville, New Jersey, and then Atlantic City. And then I was in Mount Holly for a while before I went to Trenton and then Philadelphia. So I made the rounds at small stations today because it's all owned by conglomerates. Mm-hmm. And so many of these radio stations in major markets are voice tracked. It's very difficult.
Right.
My suggestion is if you go to a college that has a broadcast or journalism program, and most of those like Rowan College here in South Jersey and Temple, they have their own radio stations. Mm-hmm. So there you could learn and get your foot in the door, per se. Mm-hmm. But all the small stations are really gone.
Right.
So you can try, because you used to get it on a small station, mm-hmm. and you'd tape yourself doing a show, mm-hmm. and you'd send that tape to a program director at a bigger mm-hmm. station where you'd like to work, mm-hmm. and he'd listen to it, and if he liked it, he'd give you a call, and if he didn't, you'd never hear from him. Mm-hmm. That kind of a thing. So today it's just difficult because all those small radio stations are gone. Mm-hmm. There are no small stations that operate like that mm-hmm. anymore, other than college radio mm-hmm. stations. So what is it? BCB, I guess, still does that.
WBCB in Levittown. They just went FM just last year on 107.3 uh-huh. by us. I mean, once you get out of the area, though, unfortunately, it tends to die a little bit.
But at least you get to hone your craft.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, big time.
That's the main thing, is to get there and practice honing your craft. What I mean by that is you're never going to walk in the door of a major city in New York or Philadelphia or Chicago or Los Angeles and get on a major radio station just saying, hey, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. It's not like applying for a job at a Walmart or something like that, where you can walk in and do something like that. So when I mean hone your craft is you work on these smaller stations, even though people don't hear you, a lot of people don't hear you. There are people who hear you, but while you're on the air, you just imagine that the whole world's listening mm-hmm. to you. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. And you do your best thinking that people far and wide mm-hmm. are listening to you mm-hmm. and that's how you're going to hone your craft. Mm-hmm. So when you get that break with a major radio station mm-hmm. and program director, they'll hear the professionalism that you've mm-hmm. developed in your voice over that time. Mm-hmm. So never be dissuaded that it's small time. There's nothing like small mm-hmm. time. There's no such mm-hmm. thing as small time.
I agree
time.
With you. Yeah.
There's no such thing as that. Mm-hmm. There's always somebody listening, mm-hmm. but you're growing as a professional. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing. You're growing as a professional.
Mm-hmm. And now they got the internet today too. So that's the way to get it out,
the same,
out there.
The same
well,
thing with
you know,
that. Right.
Here online. But that's some great advice, Tommy McCarthy. Man.
Right. Thank you.
I thank you for coming down here and sharing this history with us here today. It's so good to see you.
Fiction
man.
And fact from the McCarthy Almanac.
I like that, man. I like that. So we thank you for being part of the show here, Tommy McCarthy, the legend. Let's give it up for Tommy. Come
you.
On. Come on, Jeff.
Thank
we got to give us this history, this knowledge this man has shared with us today. Thank you so
thank
much,
you,
man.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, my man.
And Jam and Jeff, I thank you for coming down and being part of the show here with us today.
Thank you very
appreciate
much.
You.
It was an honor and a pleasure.
I'm Tim Marshall for R&B Showcase. Once again, I want to thank our very special guests, Tommy McCarthy and Jammin' Jeff Wyman. And thank you for joining us for R&B Showcase.